This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Our next guest is Gwen Petitpierre. That's a mouthful. Sorry, Gwen. <That's fine. laughs> Before we talk about your current job, what were you doing before? What's brought you to this point?
Oh, well, I've done quite a lot of things in my time.
We've got a while.
When I first left school, I went to work for NatWest Bank, and I was there for a little while, about 3 years. Then moved up to London and worked up there. Got bored, left, went to college, faffed around for a while, and ended up back in London working for a reinsurance broker for 7 years, which I absolutely loved. So completely opposite to what I'm doing now by quite a long way.
And so you now run Good Life Gateway.
Yes.
And I'm pretty sure 9 out of 10 that did you base it on the program The Good Life?
Well,
with Barbara and Tom, or
kind of. I mean, I grew up on a farm, and our lifestyle was very like The Good Life anyway. And when I'd left working in London, and I'd had children, and I'd then gone through divorce, and I moved to a house with a very small garden that I wanted to grow vegetables in. And in order to do so, I had to really look at how I managed that land and the ground. And sort of all my old farming lifestyle came back. And I thought, well, it's like living the good life, so I might as well call it Good Life Gateway, because it is the gateway of how you achieve that kind of lifestyle.
It's a great name.
And thank you.
What is a Victorian walled kitchen gardening methodology?
Yeah, I wanted to say that. That was one of my questions.
Okay, well, there is actually a walled garden around here. Petersham Nurseries.
Oh, yes.
Is a walled garden, and great big Victorian mansion houses used to have a walled garden to produce all the food and the flowers and fruit and everything for the house. And basically what a walled garden does is create a microclimate that is very beneficial to the growing of soft fruit and tender plants. So you can grow peaches in the spring in this country, whereas if they were just in a field, it would never happen. They'd get frosted. But the higher the wall, the more heat the bricks absorb, and then they give off the heat overnight, which keeps the area within the walled garden warmer.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you mentioned peaches. I'm flabbergasted that we could grow peaches in this country full stop. I didn't know we could.
It's in a walled garden. It's protected from winds and most of the weather. You do still get frost pockets, but it's much more protected. And it's a whole. I mean, the Victorians had to produce a lot of fruit and vegetables all year round for large houses and all the staff that go with it and the visitors and everything else.
So when you started and you learned about this, is it because you bought a house that had a walled garden?
No, sadly.
No. Okay, so you became interested in this method, and did you build a wall or...?
No. What I have a very small garden, but it's fenced, 6-foot fencing all the way around.
Right.
So in effect, I can almost recreate a walled garden environment. You know, if you paint the wooden fence white, then it's going to reflect a lot of the light, but if you grow other things against it, then you can create air pockets that stay warm, and my garden's south facing, so that helps. My whole back wall of my house faces south, so there you go, half a walled garden.
Amazing.
Wow. And of course, if you really look after the soil as well, that's where all your nutrients are coming from. That's how your plants are going to produce the stuff they need to produce.
There must have been a lot of trial and error and a lot of reading.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. And there is a video series, The Victorian Kitchen Garden, that was made in about the 70s. Really interesting and really informative.
How did you come across that, bearing in mind it was made in the 70s? Did you Google it, or did you find it
surfing,
on YouTube? Yeah,
surfing the net, just looking for information, and these things pop up. So you think, oh, where's that going, and investigate.
And you've got a wormery. Now, I did do some research around it. And it says, it's an efficient system of converting ordinary kitchen food waste into rich organic compost through the natural action of worms. What I don't really understand is, aren't there lots of worms naturally in the soil anyway? Can't you just dig them out and put them in, or do you have to buy the worms in en masse?
Well, if you dig out what's in your garden, then obviously there aren't going to be enough in your garden to make the soil good.
How are we talking about? Hundreds? Thousands?
I haven't counted them, but there's a lot. And I've actually got 11 wormeries now. And basically it's a completely sealed compost bin with a reservoir at the bottom. So most people have compost bins in their gardens, and if you have a look, you'll find that stuff grows really well around the bottom of the compost bin, and sometimes it's a bit soggy and squelchy around there. And that's all the official name is tea, worm tea, and that's all that leaking out of the bottom, and it's just all in the composting action of the worms.
This is fascinating. I'm the least green finger person you could meet, and like, you know,
science behind
it is amazing actually. And so how long were you doing all this stuff for yourself, growing your own fruit and veg or whatever, before you decided there's a business here and that, and sort of went down this road of creating these products?
I was working for an engineering company in Basingstoke at the time, and one of my colleagues suggested to me that I get a wormery, and it was in about October time. And over the winter, the worms are less active because they're cold, so they go to the centre of the heap to keep warm. And in about sort of March, April time, I asked my colleague, how much liquid did you get off the bottom? And he said, oh, about a litre or so. Now, I'd achieved 8 litres in 6 months over the winter months, so I thought, what am I going to do with all this wormwee?
Right. Wormwee.
Wormwee, yes. So I thought, I'll try and sell it at boot fairs and see what happens. So, of course, that led to having to make labels.
Yes.
And my eldest daughter is quite an artist, so she drew the label for the wormwee.
Oh, okay.
And so we stuck it on little 100ml bottles and 200ml bottles and went from there.
So hang on, let me just get my head around this.
Yeah.
So you did car boot sales
yeah.
with wormwee on your table.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as
did
well.
Did people come up to you and say, what is wormwee?
Yep, cracking talking point.
I bet it was.
Yes. Yes, I mean, there's a lot of curiosity because, of course, it's never been heard of.
Yeah,
I mean,
who's heard of wormwee?
Exactly. And its official name is worm tea, which doesn't roll off the tongue as easily. Yeah. Wormwee is good. I like it.
Did you sell out on that first day?
No. Had a lot of people looking at it and saying, what do you do with this? How do you collect the wee? I mean, I don't know what they think, that I sit a million worms on a little potty and collect it. It was quite funny. But it's a really good talking point.
Yeah.
And I don't think boot fairs were entirely the right place to start, but it sort of built from there. Yeah. And I thought, well, I'm getting a lot of interest, so we'll see what happens.
Lots of conversations and not much income on that first
Absolutely,
day.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
Well, can I just say, hold that thought, because we're now going to have a quick ad break. We're back to talk to Gwen about her wormwee, so stay tuned.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Come along to Molesey Youth Centre. Jam or sing in the music studio, play pool or football. Be creative in the arts and crafts room, or just chill and chat in the TV computer room or coffee bar. Entry is free, open 7 till 9:30pm Mondays and Wednesdays for aged 14 plus and Tuesdays aged 11 to 14. Check us out on Facebook, Molesey.youthcentre, or on Twitter, MolseyYC. That's Molesey Youth Centre in Ray Road, West Molesey.
Hello everybody, it's Richard Woods here from The Apprentice, and I'm delighted to announce that I have a new show on Brooklands Radio every Tuesday night, 8 till 10, and it's going to be really exciting. We're going to be talking about lots of stuff that's Surrey, and also lots of local business news, and people coming in for interviews, and all the rest of it. It's going to be brilliant. Music is going to be modern classics. I hope you enjoy it. I know that it's the sort of stuff that I play every day. I'll see you there Tuesdays, 8 till 10.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Anne Twist, and Yvonne O'Brien. And we're talking to Gwen Petit-Pierre all about wormwee. And just carrying on that theme, Gwen, how long ago did you sort of develop wormwee, and what's the journey been?
Well, you just joined us. It's not, you know, it is to do with worms.
Yes, it is. And it's not actually their wee.
No, okay.
Well, I've got the first wormery about 10 years ago, and sort of having so much success with that one and starting to sell the wormwee that came out of the bottom, I gradually built it up. And in conjunction with that, I developed the Cossack comfrey and the nettle noche, because they all have different properties that complement each other and satisfy different plant needs.
And again, obviously, with the wormwee, you took advice from people about getting a wormery, and sort of that was a learning experience. What was the sort of learning experience of Cossack comfrey and nettle noche, and sort of how did you arrive at those?
Well, that goes back to the Victorian kitchen garden methodology, because the early Victorians were great believers in recycling everything, and they used to grow comfrey specifically to make the plant food from. It's very potash rich, so potash enables plants to be very effective in how they make their fruit and flowers. And of course, if you're in a kitchen garden, you need fruit and flowers. So they used to grow it specifically for that. Nettles, of course, grow all over the place, but they're very nitrogen rich, so they the nitrogen helps develop foliage, so their lettuces, it stops them going to seed, but it gives really good body on greens and spinaches and cabbages and all that sort of thing. So that all stemmed from what I'd learned about Victorian kitchen gardening.
So I'm intrigued, Gwen. Which raw materials do you grow that are later processed into organic plant food?
I grow my own comfrey and I grow my own nettles. So
you've got some nettle soup as well, I bet you do.
No, actually. Wow. Well, they're stingy little devils, they are, and to be honest, I'm quite happy to put them in the dumpster and let them brew, because they do pong as well. They absolutely stink while they're brewing, and it's only when you've filtered it and stored it in a big tank for a while that the smell starts to dissipate. So the idea of nettle soup is not very appealing.
No, I guess it wouldn't be.
And so in the winter months when it's a bit more quieter, tell us what you do then, because you get involved in something else then, don't you?
I do, yes. And this started about 18 months ago. I've been nagging at my brother for a while to show me how to build things. He's a builder, and I wanted to do some woodworking stuff, specifically building planters, because obviously I sell plants as well. I do a lot of gardening, and I wanted to recycle pallets that I could see lying around, and I have no idea how to use the tools. So for about a year, about 18 months now, we've been working together, and on a sort of slightly separate arm, we have Gant Wood Art. Mm. So we use all sorts of recycled, reclaimed and sort of rescued bits of wood and make interesting things out of them. And in order to support that, it kind of goes full circle, because I also keep bees, which then pollinate the comfrey and the nettles, and I keep them in the field.
And you even use the wax from the bees to polish the furniture.
Absolutely.
I mean, that is truly recycling.
This is the real good life,
isn't it?
This
really is. So tell us about being a beekeeper then. That must be quite interesting.
It is, and I've only been doing that for about a year, and I opened my hive for the first time yesterday, not for a full inspection because it's not warm enough, but to... I'm going away for a week, and I needed to put an extra super on, which is basically extra frames for the bees to put the food in, so that as the queen is laying all her eggs in the brood box, she's got space and all the food goes in the top box. And that should help them reduce swarming while I'm away, because if they swarm while I'm away, I won't have any bees when I get back.
I have visions of your life being out in the garden doing all the bees and wormwee and all of that, and the rest of the time just reading up on all how to do all this stuff, because you just don't learn this stuff in school,
no,
do you? You
know, no.
It Googling and old Victorian manuals and...
There's a lot of Googling, and I do a lot of reading, and I've got an RHS Level 3 course, which is about the propagation and development of plants and their feeding requirements, and I just sort of plod through bits and pieces like that. Last February, I joined the Fleet Beekeepers Association, and I did the 10-week course there and have used their support mechanism to learn all about the bees, and I have to say I feel a complete amateur when I speak to them. I know nothing.
At what point do you think you might be at a stage when you can start selling your honey as well at farmers' markets and things like that? Because local honey is really highly sought after.
It's fantastic.
Allergies and things like that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because the bees have a roughly 3-mile radius of where they collect the pollen from. So if you buy local honey, chances are you're getting pollen from local trees, and that can help reduce allergies.
So do you know at what stage you might be able to do that as well?
I'm really hoping that I'll have enough honey this year. Last year I didn't get any honey off the bees, but as a first year you wouldn't expect to. Yeah. But if my queen management works effectively this year, I should have two or three colonies and therefore be able to take some honey off. Fingers crossed.
I can see in the future you doing something like workshops where you get children in from local schools and you show them the bees and how you do that. You talk to them about the plants and how you propagate. I can just say that's a great business.
I would absolutely love to do that, I have to say. And one of the things that really triggered me taking the big step and saying, right, I'm going to do this properly, I'm not just going to sort of tiddle about on the outside, was that the orangery at Hackwood Park came on the market, vastly, vastly more money than I could even dream of affording, but it's 5 acres of listed walled garden, and it had about 11 or 12 greenhouses that needed renovating, and it just inspired me, and I thought, what I would like is something like that to renovate and rebuild the gardens as they should have been, with elements of modern technology. I mean, the plant foods have nothing in them other than the comfrey and the rainwater and the deposits from the composters.
And on the subject of those three plant foods, I know you're selling them online on your own website.
Absolutely.
And at the farmers market.
Yes.
Are you also, I think I read somewhere that you were selling via, was it Homebase or?
Yes, last year it took a year to set up, but I was very lucky that I got working with Homebase, and I sell online with Homebase, which is very exciting. I'm not in the stores yet, but online.
And does that mean that you've really got to up the ante in terms of production levels? And
to a degree, I mean, I have the capacity to generate around 10,000 litres a year for each plant food, so that's quite significant. That would mean I'd have to do it full time, though, and that, I mean, everybody in the country would have to order via Homebase. So it's at the moment, it's only been since the end of last April, so it's still getting recognised and known within the Homebase.
So actually growing at a pace that you can manage at the
moment. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. So thinking forward for the next sort of 5 to 10 years, what would you like to do? Would you like to then acquire more land and expand on what you do? Or what? Because obviously you do these two things at the moment, but what's your true passion? Because you can see that you're really passionate about doing what you do. You can see that,
yeah.
Your body language. But,
It's really hard because I love doing both the woodwork and the plant foods and the gardening side, and of course the bees fit in with both of those. I'd like to carry on with both of them if I can keep them working parallel and interdependent of each other, then that would be the way that I'd like to go.
Would that involve taking on employees, or do you have any employees so far, or are you on your
own? I have a teenage daughter that I bully every now and again. The other one's run off to Australia for 6 months.
Get away.
Yes.
So you bullied your daughter into beekeeping. Wow.
Yes, well, she loved it until a bee got caught in her hair and then she wouldn't go near them again.
I was going to ask if you got stung when you first started.
I got stung quite a lot last year, and I've discovered that I don't react very well to bee stings. But I was very lucky in that my sister advised me that I think you put vinegar on bee stings and bicarbonate of soda on wasp stings, and that sorts them out.
You've obviously got the suit, though, haven't you, the beekeeper?
Absolutely, the gloves. Yes, oh yes. Yes, and fortunately you can't tell it's me in there because of the netted veil on it.
So did you get stung because you weren't wearing a suit, or you just had a gap in the suit? Or?
No, I've got stung on my hands because you have quite tight-fitting gloves so that you can feel what you're doing. And if you don't know... that a bee has settled, and the bees will only sting if they feel threatened, so if you're being a bit slow at inspecting the hive, then they're open too long, they're losing heat from the hive, and then they feel threatened, so they'll come out and sting you,
come out and react.
So yeah, as long as you're calm and you're sort of effective in your movements, then it should be okay.
Some of the things you read about bees, what they can do is incredible, how they can like sort of shake their tails and means one thing and they do something else when someone else is attacking them.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a bee really dance, yes.
Really?
Yeah,
dance,
yes. Yeah.
What's the bee dance for again, Gwen? I'm trying to
Well, it tells the worker bees are in kind of two batches. There are the nursery bees who look after all the brood and the queen, and then there are the flying workers who go out and collect all the pollen. And they, if they're looking for a new source of pollen, they'll come back onto the edge of the hive and do a particular dance which tells everybody else which direction to go in to get that pollen.
How clever is that?
It's amazing. That it's
is
fascinating.
Amazing.
Yeah. Really and interesting.
Just touching on the wood side of your business again, what's some of the most unusual pieces of wood that you've recycled?
Well, we managed to find quite a big supply of oak from an oak timber frame builder's yard. And we've managed to make some quite different things with that, which has been quite exciting. And it's just beautiful wood. My sister had a cherry tree in her garden that needed to be cut down. And we had that wood planked. And we've made just amazingly beautiful platters. It's such a rich grained wood. And you can make a platter with all the bark on the edge. And it's lovely. I love working with it. I kind of fall in love with each piece I work with, so it's very difficult to sell.
I bet you do.
She does. Well, again, sadly, Gwen, time's crept up on us. Can you offer the listeners any advice if they're thinking about, you know, reverting more to recycling more or getting more of the good life that you have? What could they do? One thing, even.
One thing. It's a really small thing, but don't chuck your green veg and your tea bags and your eggshells in the bin. Put them in a pot. You can buy very small wormeries that can sit on your windowsill in the kitchen. They're called Junior Wormeries. They're from Original Organics, who are a brilliant company, really helpful. And you know, that's just your way of recycling. And you can use the tea on house plants. You can use it on any plants. It doesn't have to be a full-scale Victorian garden.
You want me to have worms in my kitchen?
It's fine. You can put them in the conservatory or the garage if you'd prefer. It's all contained and they can't escape.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Gwen. So that was Gwen KCPA. Do you have a website you can tell our listeners, Gwen?
Yes, it's goodlifegateway.com or gantwoodart.com.
And if they wanted to email you, would that be via the website or is there a separate email address?
They can email via the website. For Good Life Gateway, it's info@goodlifegateway.com. And for Gant Wood Art, it will be bespoke@gantwoodart.com.
Thank you very much. Gwen Petitpierre from Good Life Gateway.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.